Hey, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Forest City North Church. We're a church in London, Ontario. And our hope is that this message that you're listening to will have an impact on your life. I encourage you to grab a coffee, make yourself a tea, sit back, and enjoy this message.
So here we are launching this brand new series, Everything Changes. And really, the series kind of revolves around a piece of news, right? There was this news that changed everything. And so what I wanted to do was actually look at what kind of news is making headlines around here. But I thought to do this by searching through YouTube to see what is trending, what's the word, viral, right? What's going viral on YouTube and that sort of thing. See, I'm not hip enough to know what is going viral, but I am smart enough to do a Google search about it. Yes, I'm fully entrenched in my 30s and on the exit of Coolville. But the results were actually staggering. I was shocked at what is the most viewed video on YouTube. I couldn't believe it. It blew my mind. See, the one thing that blew my mind was really that it, at the time of my research, had 4.99 billion views. I mean, that number is staggering. Now, that was when I researched this, but now it's actually climbed in excess of 5 billion views. To put that in perspective, that's like two-thirds of the world's population has watched that video at least once. I mean, that is crazy. This is like headlines around the globe. Does anybody know what the video is? Well, we had somebody say Drake. It starts with a D. It's Despacito. Are you kidding me? Despacito is the most viewed video on YouTube. What does that tell you about us as a society? Right? Like, and this is just the music videos, right? Like, this is just music videos. Those all have, like, the biggest number of hits. And after that, they actually keep track of non-music videos, right? So the headline, the number one most viewed non-music video on YouTube, I kid you not, is 860 million views. Far cry from the 5 billion, but 860 million. Think about this. This is everybody in the city of London, the entire population. If you divide the number of views by that number, that means every single human in the city of London needs to watch the video 2,200 times. That's 37 hours. See, the video is only like 1 minute long. This is why probably most people watch it, but does anybody know what this video is? Crickets. It is the video, and I'm sure many of you have seen it, Charlie Bit My Finger. Seriously, like 860 million views of these little British kids biting each other. Like, I mean, if you see, Charlie, ow, right? Like this is, Charlie, that hurt, right? Like, I mean, this is what we're viewing. This is like what shapes us. This is what the world is tuning in for. I mean, what does this change? I mean, aside from not getting that moment in time back, what does it change? I mean, the internet is this repository of information so staggering that the library at Alexandria pales in comparison to what is out there. We're watching Charlie Bit My Finger. We're watching Despacito back to back when you can go from London, Ontario to London, England to Amsterdam to Johannesburg to Addis Ababa to St. Petersburg, all within clicks in your home. Are you watching Charlie Bit My Finger? What does that even change? I thought, okay, it's a little bit funny here and there, right, to watch these videos. It changes. And that maybe gives you momentary happiness. But I thought in the grand scheme of things, what does Despacito and what does Charlie Bit My Finger change about anything? This is kind of like the news. This is what passes for news today. I mean, you tell, hey, have you seen this video? I do it with certain videos, right? It's like, hey, have you seen that video? You should check this out, right? Like, there are some funny things out there, but ultimately, they don't change much, right? But it's kind of what passes for headline news for us today. And I thought about it, though. See, because there's this past event that was a headline some 2,000 years ago that actually changes everything. It actually changed everything. It's the resurrection of Jesus. See, this singular event changed the trajectory of everything. And it didn't somehow just change what's coming next. It also, in a retroactive way, changed everything that preceded it. And in fact, this event, the fact that Jesus died on a cross, went into a tomb, and 3 days later came out emerging as a living bodily human, is what our faith hinges on. If you think about it, it's that single claim that our faith hinges on. In fact, the Bible actually identifies this. It comes in this section of 1 Corinthians where Paul is writing to these people, and he says these words. He says, listen, if Christ has not been raised, if Jesus didn't come back to life, your faith is futile. I mean, those are some strong words. If Jesus didn't raise up to life again, your faith is futile. And he says, why? Because you are still in your sins. Nothing was covered. Nothing was paid for. Nothing was looked after. And then he says something strange that applies to this morning, and we'll get into it later. But he says, then those who have fallen asleep in Christ, he said, those are the people who believe in Jesus but have died already. They called it soul sleep back in that day. But he says, then those also who have fallen asleep in Christ are lost. I mean, these are strong words, right? If Jesus didn't raise up from the grave, then those people are lost too. And then he says, if only for this life, if it's only for the here and now that we have hope in Christ, we are of all people most to be pitied. But Christ has indeed been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. For since death came through a man, the resurrection of the dead comes also through a man. You see, there's that but there, right? Because Jesus was raised up, things change. And that's the title of this series, that everything changes. Absolutely everything hinges on the resurrection, on Easter, on what we celebrated last week. And so for these 3 weeks, we're going to push this on replay. We're going to relive the account of Easter. We're going to understand that this happened. We're going to live it. We're going to breathe it. And we're going to look at how it changes our future this morning. We're going to look at how it changes our future, how it gives us hope for an actual future. And in light of that hope for an actual future, we're going to look at then what happens to our present. See, because if our future changes, I think our present changes too. And if our future changes and our present changes, we're going to look at how our past changes in light of all of that. And so this is how we're going to flow for the next 3 weeks. The ordering is so incredibly important, especially when you consider that one verse that I read for you there in verse 19 of that passage. It says, if only for this life we have hope in Christ, we are of all people most to be pitied. See, it's not just a present thing. It's not just a feel good here and now. It changes everything. It's the future. It's the present. It's the past. Everything changes. So let's talk Easter for a minute. I just want to bring everybody up to speed and remind us what happened at Easter. You see, some 2,000 years ago, there was this man named Jesus. There was this man named Jesus, and he walked on this earth. Only he wasn't just this ordinary man. He was actually God in the flesh. Now, that's a radical claim right there in and of itself. And this is unique to Christianity, that God actually intersected his creation. There's no other belief system that professes this. Where the creator, God, said, I need to rescue and restore everything, so I'm going to step into creation. And that has a lot of implications theologically, practically. But hang on to that. The creator, God, stepped into creation. It's radical. Absolutely radical. But it goes further, you see, because on Good Friday, we read that the Creator hung on a cross, and we read that he died. We read that he tasted the pangs of death, and that doesn't seem fitting for God, does it? It doesn't seem fitting. So how can God die? How can God actually taste death? And I can only imagine that on that day, on Good Friday, things seemed hopeless. It seemed like death had actually won. And the Bible actually calls death the last great enemy. And it seems like that enemy actually had victory. But the beautiful thing about Easter is that it doesn't end simply on the Friday. We actually move to the Sunday. And we read that the tomb is actually empty. that the man Jesus, that God himself, who tasted death, didn't stay there. 3 days later, that God, that man, rose from the grave victorious over death, and the Bible speaks to this as well. It says this about what happened. It says, death has been swallowed up in victory. See, death actually lost one here. It actually lost one. It says, where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? The sting of death is sin, and the power of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, he gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. You see, in this thing, in this Easter day, there was this reversal of the trend. It says, therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. See, because Jesus rose from the dead, because he defeated death, faith is not in vain. And not only does that give us the future hope, but Paul actually writes in here, stand firm, do good right now. And so you see, the future is tied to the present, which is tied to our past. And so I want to talk about the future. I want to talk about this future hope that is actually provided because of Easter. It's an ultimate hope. It is a beautiful hope. And I want to do that through two simple conversations. I mean, I say simple. They're actually not that simple, but the titles I've given are kind of simple. It's simply, first conversation number one is life after death. Life after death. And the second conversation that I want to have with you is about life after death. Wrap your minds around that one. What do you mean life after death and life after death? What are you talking about, Anthony? See, this morning, I think there is the potential for there to be a seismic shift in how we understand what comes next. I think for some of us here this morning, the foundation of what we believe about the afterlife might be shaken. It might start to feel a bit unstable. And for that, I am glad, and I will apologize up front. But when you come through the other side, I think, in fact, I believe, you will find the true hope of the Christian faith. And you won't be saddled with a parody. I think you will find the real hope. You will find the ultimate hope. And so this morning, please allow me to humbly submit these things before you. Because I know what it can do. I know that it can rattle you. I know it can set a foundational truth that you might believe a little bit more uneven. And so in all the love that I can muster, all the humility that I can muster, I want to talk about life after death and life after death. And so I want to start with the life after death conversation. It's our first one. Life after death. And like I said, paradigm rattling possibly. But humbly, I submit before you, there's one statistic that nobody can make up, nobody can fabricate, nobody can change. It's that 100% of us will die. Last time I checked, that statistic is pretty steady. And some of you chuckle and some of you say, yeah, and that scares me. That scares me. I know, because it's like the number one or two fear. For some people, it's public speaking and death's right behind it. But this is the fear that many of us walk with. And for some of us, the one thing that comforts us is that when we die, we go to heaven. And I want to, as humbly as possible, submit before you this morning, I don't believe that we go to heaven when we die. I'm sure you expected that at church. But in all honesty, I do not believe we go to heaven when we die. I don't believe the Bible teaches it. I don't believe that Jesus' example of his resurrection shows us that. I believe it's something that's been perpetuated out of, I don't want to be too critical, but out of almost a lazy understanding. And not lazy in a sense of I don't want to put the work in, but something, if we can short circuit kind of grief and all of that sort of thing, it's a lot easier to believe that we simply go to heaven. It's a lot easier to believe that that's it, that it's a one and done thing and everything is all good after this. But I don't believe the Bible allows us to stay there. And as I said, very carefully, I want to tread into this. And you're wondering, probably, how can I make that claim? How can this 31-year-old dude stand here and just say, the Bible doesn't teach this? Show me something that actually backs up what you're saying. Okay, I'll try. See, in John chapter 3, Jesus is talking to this man. His name's Nicodemus. He's asking him questions. He's saying, hey, can you tell me about these things? And Jesus just drops this line. And he says, listen, Nicodemus, no one has ever gone into heaven. No one has ever gone into heaven except the one who came from heaven, the Son of Man. Now, the Son of Man is another word for Jesus, another title for Jesus. It's how we understand him. And here Jesus is saying to this man, Nicodemus, listen, nobody goes to heaven except for me, and I've already been there. We don't talk about these verses a lot. But here it is. Jesus just says it. Listen, nobody goes to heaven except for me. I'm there. And so it seems that heaven's this place that's kind of reserved for God and the spiritual beings, I believe, you know, angels and this sort of thing, located in heaven. He said, but listen, this isn't for you. He said, okay, that's great in theory. How does that help me now? It's all well and good to just say the Bible even says this, but what do I do with that? I mean, you're going to tell me then, Anthony, that the only comfort I find is actually unfounded? Like, who do you think you are? How do I, and this is the practical part, how do I grieve the death of a child? I mean, ask yourself, how do I do that if I don't think they go to heaven? How do I grieve for a father, a mother, a brother, a sister, a friend, a coworker, some other close relation, if they're not going to heaven? How do you do that? I mean, what do you do, too, in the midst of a terminal illness of some kind with somebody, and you know that the outcome is not looking good? I mean, what do you do? Do you just sit back and say, well, you know what? This crummy life, this is all we get, isn't it? If my hope is gone, then this is it. And this blows. I want to tell you that this isn't all you get. I don't think the Bible teaches this is all you get. I just think it doesn't teach we go to heaven when we die. See, there is hope, and it is founded in this passage from 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. It says it this way, if I can find it. I've got so many passages here. One more. See, Paul writes to these people in a church in Thessalonica. They're asking the same question. They're like, hey, what happens, man? Like, Jesus isn't back. He's actually ascended to heaven. He's gone. And there are people who have passed away. Like, what happens? What happens to them? I mean, when he comes back, things look good. But what about the people who have gone before? And he says, listen, brothers and sisters. It's kind of funny how he gets into it. He says, brothers and sisters, we don't want you to be uninformed about those who sleep in death. It's like, oh, just want to keep you in the loop, by the way. We don't want you to be uninformed about this. He says, we don't want you to be uninformed about those who sleep in death so that you do not grieve like the rest of mankind who have no hope. And he says, for we believe that Jesus died and rose again, as if that changes something about how you can grieve. And he's just like, listen, we don't want you to just waste away. We don't want you to be hopeless. And it's funny because you can read the account in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John of the Jesus stories, and you can hear about him coming up out of the grave in the flesh, and this is what hope we have, is that Jesus did this and that one day we will too. But that's sort of the life after death part. But this is what we can expect, to one day have our own resurrection experience. And my hunch is that that will happen in the life after death. But that leaves you in the life after death part. See, I think, though, that we can safely say that there is this sort of intermediate state. What that looks like, I'm not sure, necessarily. But I believe that it consists of these things. I think we will have peace. I think that body that was stricken with illness will not feel that, will not have that. I believe we will be in communion with Christ who has gone before us. I believe that we will be in a state of, the term I'm thinking of is like spiritual bliss. And it is beautiful. I mean, the reason I say this too is that there was this encounter between Jesus and these two men. See, when he hung on the cross, there were two men hanging around him, and they said, listen, Jesus, will you remember me? One of them said, will you forgive me for what I've done? Will you remember me when you come into your kingdom? You're going somewhere. I know you're going there, and I want to be with you. And Jesus' response is stunningly simple. He just says, truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. I mean, you will be with me. See, when you and I die, when a friend or a loved one that we know passes away, when they push from this life into the next, I think there will be a seamless experience and we will be in the presence of Jesus. And this is a beautiful thing. This is absolutely beautiful. We get to experience the fullness of Jesus. And that may not seem like much because we haven't seen him around, you know what I mean? Like, he didn't walk this earth with us. He isn't here physically right now. But think about if you were to go back to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you would read the Jesus stories. What happened when Jesus showed up? I mean, he moves into a town where somebody is blind. And he says, hey, why don't you just see? He said, I'm going to restore your sight. I'm going to set this right. And it didn't just end with sight. I mean, he moves into town and he says, listen, you haven't walked maybe your whole life or maybe for several years. Why don't you just get up and walk? I mean, how cool is this? When Jesus moves, things get restored. Things are put right. I mean, you can think about it. Where people with anxiety existed, he set them at ease. It's not just that, too. I mean, when he would come into a place where injustice raged, justice was brought. Where there was hatred that existed, Jesus brought love, Jesus brought peace, Jesus brought hope. And so to actually exist in a state where we get to be in full communion with Jesus is going to be a beautiful thing. Things are going to be set right. We will be at peace. We'll experience, as I said, spiritual bliss. And that might sound better hearing that, but that's not all there is. See, I think that's the life after death portion of what comes next. But I think our ultimate hope is in the life, after death. It's conversation number two. It's life after death. You see, it's one thing to simply say we just get to be with Jesus when we die. I mean, that's kind of the standard stock answer, right? It's like, well, when you die, you get to be with Jesus. And that is a beautiful thing. But in the example of Jesus, he raises up and he's got a body. He has flesh. He gets up. He walks out. He starts interacting with people. He starts eating food. He starts fishing. He starts moving around. He's fully human again. And I think this is what awaits each of us. That one day, we will have our very own resurrection experience just like that of Jesus. And we will get up and we will walk out. And we'll get to do whatever we want here in this earth, and it will be good. We will get to exist in a newly restored body in this restored earth, and we will call this home. And it truly will be our home. And the kicker is it will be for an eternity. Wrap your mind around that one. An eternity of goodness, an eternity of a body that is restored, an eternity of the earth being restored and everything in it. How good is this? I want to read a passage for you. Romans chapter 8, it talks about the human experience and it talks about the hope we have. It says, we know that the whole creation has been groaning, is in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. We can attest to this, right? Like, we can look around and say, something ain't right. My experience, somebody else's experience, something ain't right. Not only so, but we ourselves, who are the first fruits of the Spirit, that is those of us who believe in Jesus, we know this to be true because our spirit, we groan inwardly as we await eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of what of our bodies? We wait for that day, and yet we know that things are not so good right now. But it is in this hope that we are saved. It is this hope of one day all things being restored. It's the redemption of our bodies. It's the redemption of this planet, of this universe, of this creation. It's life, after death. It is a beautiful thing, and this means something because it means what we experience here and now is not the end. It means that doesn't get the last word. Whatever it is, it means that, yes, we will wait here for now, and there is going to come a day where we die, but that death is not the end of all things. It is simply pushing from this life into the next. It is this seamless transition into the presence of God, and from there we will wait, and one day we will be fully encased in flesh. And maybe we'll be a few pounds lighter. But this is a beautiful thing. Absolutely beautiful. It means the body riddled with cancer doesn't have to face that anymore. It doesn't, you know, I mean, the teeth that are, I don't know, British, they won't be that way anymore. I mean, this means all good things. Like, I mean, wrap your head around it. Wrap your head around an eternity of these things. I mean, can you imagine what that will be like? I have a hard time, so I'm a visual guy on this front. I'm going to show you a bunch of pictures of what I think it's going to be like. And so this first one's going to come up. And this, I mean, imagine getting to walk on the mountaintops because your knees are fine, the altitude doesn't affect you, and that you just get to get up there one day and say, I'm going to start doing this, and I don't know, maybe 20 years from now I'm going to stop, but it's not going to feel like it. It's going to feel like only a single day, and from there you say, I want to take in colors and a sunrise, and I want to see hot air balloons flying. Maybe I want to be in one of them because I was afraid of heights before, but I'm not anymore. And think about the beauty of the creation that you get to experience. And you say, listen, that's not enough. I need to do something else. I'm going to go live on the ocean. And you just say, I'm going to build a house here. I'm going to set up shop. I'm going to enjoy the waves crashing in, knowing that I am safe. And I'm going to walk there with God himself. And I'm going to get to experience the beauty and the wonder. And then I'm going to go kayaking for the next 50 years. And I'm not going to grow tired. And it sounds silly, but 50 years in eternity is like the blink of an eye. And you're going to say, listen, Lake Louise, yeah, you're cold, but I'm going to kayak. And then I'm going to play golf at Augusta National. But not every course needs to be Augusta National. I don't even need to go to Georgia because every golf course is going to be this way. And there's going to be no slow play. And it's going to be pristine. And it doesn't matter if you're black or white, man, woman, child, doesn't matter. And you just say, I'm a little hungry now. Let's go for some food. And the bounty that is grown out of the earth, the colors and the tastes and the textures, and you'll know how to prepare it. This is beautiful. And you say, listen, I think I need to see a sunset. And I'm just going to take it in, the tranquility. And God's going to paint the sky. And I get to experience it. And then as my day or my 1,000 years winds down, I'm going to sit on the beach with friends and I'm going to have a fire and hear the waves rolling in. Peace. Calm. Fading into the background. And as the night sky emerges, you get to actually see the stars because the light pollution is gone. Why? Because God himself will be our light and he will guide us and he will show us a beautiful sky like we have never seen. My friends, this is the hope of the Christian faith, that one day everything will be set right and we will have an eternity to explore and to engage and to enjoy the bounty that God provides. This is the hope. It's not simply that we escape this place and go to heaven one day. It's that we get to come right back here, right to our homes. And you say, listen, that sounds good, but if I'm coming back here, where's God? I mean, if I've left his presence and I've come back to this earth, where is he? Is he just gone and off in some other realm? No, no, no. Because at the end of the Bible, there are these passages. And it says, then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. There I saw heaven and earth renewed and restored. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place, get this, his dwelling place is now among the people. It's like heaven and earth collide and God is right there. And he says, and he will dwell with them. This is like the garden in the beginning all over again, my friends. They will be his people. That is, you and I will be his people. And God himself will be with them and he will be our God. Here's the kicker. He will wipe away every tear. The crumminess that you are facing right now, it will be gone. Whatever it is. I mean, you remember when your parents wiped your tears away? Imagine God himself, your creator, standing there saying, just weep no more. I've got you. He will wipe away your tears. There will be no more death. Why? Because death has been defeated. It's gone. It is all gone. There will be no more mourning or crying or pain. Why? Because the old order of things has passed away. And God himself will say, I am making everything renewed and restored. And then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. He said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, and I am everything in between. I am the beginning. I am the end. To the thirsty, those of you who are mourning, who have no strength to keep going, I will give water without cost from the spring of the water of life. And those who are victorious, which is those of us who have put our faith in him, they will inherit all of this, and he will be our God, and we will be his children. Life after death, my friends. This is the hope of the Christian faith. It's not simply that we go to heaven someday. It's not that we escape all of this. It's that everything you have gone through, everything you have experienced is restored, and it is not all for naught. It is all for something. It is all for the beautiful renewal of all things. This is the hope we have. So, my friends, please don't stop at life after death. Move on to life after death, because it is a beautiful future. It is a bright future. And it's all for us. Would you stand? You know that the future's coming. We already know the end. And I think sometimes we forget that we actually know the end. If you ever wonder what the end is, open that book of the Bible called Revelation up. There's some weird stuff in there, but open it up to the 21st chapter and read those first 7 verses. God will be our God and we will be his people, and it will be right here in our home that he resides with us. And all the garbage, all the crumminess, all the just downright crap that you are facing, it's going to be wiped away. It's going to be a clean slate. And that means something for here and now. And next week, we're going to explore the present, how the empty tomb of Jesus changes the present. It's going to be a great morning, and I want all of you to come back for that. It's so important to realize that because of the empty tomb, everything changes. Everything. And I don't want any of you to miss it. Because if everything changes, it matters. It matters not just to me. It matters not just to a pastor or people up on the stage. It matters to every single human being on this planet. And maybe some of you know some human beings who could stand to be in this place. And how they could understand what Jesus did, the fact that he's not in that tomb anymore, that it changes. It changes what's here and now because of what changes in our future. Now, I know, I was standing down there and I thought, how do I finish this? And normally we say a prayer, but I want to do something a little bit different this morning. Some of you maybe don't know what to do with this. Some of you are maybe unsure of where it's going, but I want you to just open up your hands. I want you to put them out, and I want you to take them and just leave them empty and say, God, I want you to fill these with the future hope. May it be so weighty, I cannot help but feel it in my hands. And I want to give you a second just to ask for that to happen. And then I'm going to close this out. There is this old tradition within the church. It extends way back. It extends actually even beyond that into the people of Israel. There's this guy named Aaron, and he is the first high priest of the people of Israel. He's the first person who communicates directly with God. And in the Bible, there is this thing called a blessing. It is God's words to his people that he wants them to know, that he wants them to understand. And it said that he raised his hands and he said to the people of Israel, may the Lord bless you, may the Lord keep you, and may the Lord make his face to shine upon you and give you his peace. And those are the words from God to his people then, and they're the words from him to us now. My friends, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and give you his peace. And so this morning, as you exit, walk in the peace of Jesus. Walk in the peace of the empty tomb.